straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 183, brought to you by our Hook'em.com, our really good friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden, and I'm joined, as usual, by Kirk Bowles, Taylor's favorite duck. And, duck, we're inching ever so closer to the reality of live sports happening, NBA, MLB, and more importantly, your Texas Longhorn.
You can almost taste it, can't you?
Almost.
I'm not putting
the cart before the horse, Duck. And to tell our listeners, we're gonna have a very great conversation with Westlake's Tyler Campbell, son of NFL and Longhorn royalty, a little later. But first, the Longhorns released a 19-page manual to their student athlete about returning to campus, and it just kind of gives you the feeling that, okay, look, this thing's really happening. The coronavirus has not left our midst. We know that. Lots of reports of positive tests. Alabama, I believe, had 5, Duck, and A&M had a couple. So it's happening, and it's going to happen. Is it too much too soon? I always thought that that we were going to, you know, maybe wait a little bit longer, but is it too much too soon?
I don't know. I worry about that. You know, Lincoln Riley was one of those who was the most outspoken about that being rushed too soon, as you put it. And they were not going to open their voluntary reporting to their facilities till July 1. And I respect that, because coaches are so damn competitive and to the point where they can be ruthless about any little edge. Look at the New England Patriots, right? Looking for every loophole, every little thing. And so I respect Lincoln Riley for doing that. You know, again, as we've always said, safety and health and well-being of these athletes has to come first, and it does. So, yeah, I did a column on Jake Spavital on Texas State, and he talked about their protocol last week and said they haven't got to come to a tent first to get symptoms checked, temperature checked, and they aren't even allowed in the facility except the weight room in groups of like 7 to 10. So it's got to be strictly monitored, and you got to be put in the health first.
You know, and when you think about the safety precautions that everybody's having to take, the one thing that really resonates with me, Doug, is this is happening. They're not going to leave that money on the table. NFL, NBA,
oh, yeah.
NCAA, the only
baseball.
One, baseball,
baseball.
The only one that I worry about is high school football. I don't know if they're going to be able to afford tests for all these kids if they test positive. That's a lot of high school in Texas or whatever. But as far as Texas is concerned, I read some of the manual that Statesman got. Good job, our boy BD. His underclassmen who live out of town can come back Monday, and then anyone flying here must quarantine for a week. That's 17 freshmen and walk-ons coming onto campus. Those are a lot of new faces. Some of them from out of town. Most of them from out of town. So Texas is going to have to be on their P's and Q's, Duck, or things could go south. I'm not only just for Texas, but for everybody. The one thing that I'll definitely bring up is all of these protests, the activism, wonderful cause. I'm, as a black man, I appreciate the activism, and especially the white people coming out, because that gives it a bigger, even bigger voice. Just more white people in America than black. So that's the good thing. The scary thing is you had all these people on top of each other, Doug. Arm in arm, nose to nose, hugged up, and the coronavirus spread through close contact. So that's one that I don't know that they can win. And I think these positive tests are going to continue to come out in record numbers. How do you gauge that with the return of football?
Well, you know, we've seen the number of coronavirus infection cases rising in the state of Texas 3 days in a row as we're taping this. So, and I do also believe that the numbers that cases are rising in 21 states, and that's no small thing, you know, as our economy is reopening and people are going back to work in their offices and restaurants and businesses are opening. We're so far not out of this, it's not even funny, and we've got a long way to go. And people are talking about the second wave. We ain't out of the first wave, dog. That first wave is still crashing on our shores. And I think it's, you know, and like you said, the protests are admirable, and it's such a great cause. But
so many people not wearing masks in those protests.
So many. You got to put your safety first. And I think there's a perception, I don't know how large, if it's half the country or what, they think, okay, whew, we survived the corona.
All right, here we go. We're back.
Yeah,
we're not back. We're not back,
brother. We're not back. And you're right. You know, I worry about the high schools too. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see blanket tests for everybody on that high school and college level, just the ones that are symptomatic and do a lot of contact tracing after people maybe get the infection. But, yeah, we're not out of this by a long shot. I think we're seeing a lot of optimism for college and pro football. I agree. And it's going to be interesting because the NBA and golf, which starts today at Colonial on this Thursday, they're kind of the test cases, don't you think? And football is going to be watching and listening and learning each and every day as these other sports, you know, take center stage.
I know, but these golfers, man, they don't have to touch anybody, and they can maintain.
No.
That is the best. It is the great social distance sport. You don't have to be around anybody on a golf course. Just stay away from the galleries. Are there going to be fans at this Colonial, Doug?
No fans.
No fans.
And media, they've limited to 23 reporters.
Our own Kevin Robbins is there, our buddy there, our former colleague.
I wonder how he's there.
He always seems to get credentialed to these events. I don't know, but he was on social media playing the course the other day. So I guess he's covering it. Why would he be up there? So,
well, I don't. Who would he be covering it for, though? I mean, I tried to get a credential, but it's one reporter per media outlet, and Golf Week got our Gannett credential. So I wasn't allowed to go.
They're counting Gannett as one outlet?
Yes, the entire Gannett industry.
So USA Today. So USA Today didn't go.
I don't think so. I didn't know specifically how many, but, you know, I think it was like 23 reporters. I wrote about my nine things. I think last year were like 320. So, you know, you can obviously see the effect, but it's going to be interesting. As you said, you know, golf may be the easiest one to police and to observe proper protocol. I mean, they can get their own golf bag. I mean, their own golf club out of the bag that caddy doesn't even need to hand it to them. And if you have no reporters and no fans and limited staff, I would think golf should come back bigger and stronger and quicker than any of the other team sports.
I think so, too. And still, you look at football, man, these guys going to be running into each other on every play, snorting and spitting. And I do believe that you're going to see every player on a football field with a plexiglass helmet, those visors.
Yeah, that's going to happen. I mean,
that just seems to be a no-brainer to me. That would be smart. There's no reason for your nose to be exposed for those droplets. So it's going to be crazy. I, for one, it's our livelihood, Doug. We need football back. It just makes what we do go. But safety first. What about MLB and NBA? MLB, Doug, I know those are your boys, but they're dropping the ball on this thing.
Oh, they used to be my boys.
Those are your
boys. Like we talked about, I never watch live baseball unless I'm at a game covering it or it's the playoffs. But they can't get out of their own way. And, you know, the Wall Street Journal had an instant story about it. The headline was baseball drops the ball on return. And they're still deadlocked. And they cannot come to a settlement. And it's all about money. You know,
isn't it always about money, dog?
Somebody said it's not about the money. It's always about the money.
It's about the money.
And, you know, we're seeing everything, all kind of proposals from 114 game schedule to a 76 game schedule Major League Baseball owners proposed to the players, where they could get up to 75%. Of their prorated salaries if the playoffs come off as planned. But and if they don't have any agreement at all, said my understanding is that the Major League Baseball can implement however many scheduled games that they want. So there might be as few as 48 games.
Please let that happen.
I don't know. I'm
Did
almost
I say that out loud?
To the part where why bother? 48 games, I mean, I don't know. That seems so small.
That's 16 three-game series. Oh, come on.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I really think, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I really think.
You're always wrong, but go ahead.
I really think the fans in America could turn on baseball and say, just go away, you know.
Most of them have already, Kirk.
People don't watch baseball. Attendance has dropped 4 years in a row, but. You know, people would still watch and everything, but the ratings dip compared to like NBA or football, obviously. But I really think, I'm not saying this is a death knell for baseball, but it could do some mortal wounding to itself if it doesn't get its act together.
What about the NBA 22 team tournament? I love it. I love that idea. I wish there, but I kind of wish that there were fewer teams. I don't want to see the 8, 9 seed in a play-in tournament. They're not going to win anything.
But I think they went too far to make it fair that if the 9th place team is within 4 games of the 8th place team, they have a play. And come on, you know, quit trying to be so fair to everybody.
If you're within 4 games, if you're just 4 games out, then you weren't going to make a run.
I think I have one issue that I really think they should have experimented and played without conferences, at least for the playoffs, and have 16 versus 1 and 15. And see how it plays out. See how the players like it. See how the fans like it. I think the NBA kind of missed the boat on maybe not experimenting with their postseason.
You know what? I think they should go with that non-conference beating thing moving forward. I still don't mind the Eastern Conference be Western Conference because for travel reasons, you know, that's a good thing to do that to keep people geographically in the same area, limits travel. But when the playoffs come, you should see them 1-16.
I think that would have made a lot of sense. I really do.
So,
I don't know why they haven't, you know, given that a try. And, you know, and to me, this is such a novel period in our sports history that it's okay to experiment a little bit, you know. And if baseball comes back, have the DH in both leagues or no leagues, and, you know, have robotized strike zones if you must. But, I was disappointed to see them not experiment with the seeding. But like I say, it'll be good to have it back in July, no matter what form it looks like.
I'm sure they're here tired of listening to us. Let's get to Tyler Campbell.
Let's do it.
On Second Thought.
Doug, one of my favorites has agreed to join us. You covered his father at University of Texas when I was like in the 5th grade, and he was just a gleam in his dad's eye, but now he's a grown man. He's the host of Real Life, Real Talk on 104.9 The Horn. Currently on hiatus, but it's coming back. I promise you, Saturdays from 12 to 1, Aaron Hogan, make that happen. Also, if you want to hear his commentary, go to iamtylercampbell.com
And that's his name, folks. Tyler Campbell joining us. How you doing, bro?
Hey, man, the sun is shining. Ain't nothing shaking but the limbs on the trees, said Kirk. Great to hear you guys, always.
Great to have you with us, my friend. And I tell you what, tumultuous times in America and across the world, you know, with the focus about the murder of George Floyd in Minnesota and the funerals that have been so overwhelming.
Homegoings.
Touching, inspiring.
Duck, in our community, we call it a homegoing.
I'm going to tell you the difference.
I'm going to give you a little bit of knowledge here. When I was growing up, Duck, we had funerals, and boy, those were brutal. I mean, people laying out, trying to jump in the casket. I've seen all of that in my community. But somewhere around in the 90s, early 2000s, we decided to stop doing that as a community, and we just made it more of a celebration like New Orleans does it.
Yeah.
And the music and the joy and the speaks and, all of that stuff. My dad had a home going, Duck, and the music and the speeches were great. So it's more of an uplifting thing now than it was back in the day. So George Floyd, and I watched it, Duck, that was a home going. With Neo there, Terrell Owens, Jamie Foxx, star power, Al B. Shore, Reverend Al Sharpton did a great job, Doug. He did a great job with the sermon. So so they're homegoings now. So go ahead, though, with your question for Tyler. I had to educate
her. No, he had to educate. He had to use the opportunity.
I was just curious. Is that there was so much anger and rage and deservedly so, and the nation was so appalled by the images that we were seeing on our television. You know, there have been protests going on in Austin since May 29th. There was this great peaceful protest that started at Houston Tillotson College here in Austin. Do you sense that the tenor has changed and the tone has changed in any way, Tyler, and that maybe, okay, the rage is still there, but are you more encouraged or scared for our country right now, Tyler?
Well, so I think we're entering into the meat of it, right? I think like when you talk to the older, especially older folks that I talk to in the Black community, the biggest thing that their hope is that we have their staying power on this subject. We live in a social media age, and everybody is gung-ho immediately, right? Because it's IG, instant gratification of everything. So everything's in the right now. And right. So I think the biggest thing that we're starting to see going through those weeks, now we're starting to transition to, can we have staying power on the subject? Because when you have staying power, that's the conversation, that's the healing. That's when your tone of your words, those things start to change, because now we're in it. So now it's the education process, and now it's the healing process. That's kind of how I feel. And I'll tell you, it's like my grandmother said, and just the way the way my focus point on adversity in general is always like, even a rose has the capability to rise out of the ashes. Okay, so as bad and as dark as things get, it's also the opportunity for new leaders to stand for. It's also the time of new opportunity and new voices. I'm really excited for what our young people are going to do throughout this process, because I feel like people are going to discover that they have a voice. They have something to say to people who are outside of the Black community. Why? Because we interact with it on a regular basis. So even if you never felt like you had a voice, Kirk, like even if you never felt like you had a voice, bro, you have one now. You have a platform, you have attention now, and the focus will always be, I tell people, especially who are in the white community, I say, man, come with an ear to listen and a heart to serve. Don't come with the ear to hear. When you hear things, you just let them flow fluidly. And it moves from one ear to the next. But when you take the time to listen, then you process what exactly is being said. And then you put it into action as to what you do to pick up the torch and make things better than the way that we found them.
You know what
I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. You brought up roses. You're the son of the Tyler Rose Earl Campbell, you and your brother Christian. And yeah. We have history. Our families have history. Your grandparents grew up. Your grandparents worked the rose fields of East Texas. My grandparents worked the rose fields of East Texas. I worked in the rose fields of East Texas with my parents. So
bring it home,
Ted. And in those rose fields, there was knowledge being dropped from the OGs, from grandma, we called her Big Mama, from my grandparents, from my mom, from my dad. And we would just listen as kids. I'm talking about from age 9 to 14, I was in those fields. And there was so much knowledge and how to deal with white people, because we weren't going to always be under mom's skirt the whole time. And there's going to be a time when I had to go to school with white kids and all of that. And along the lines, around age 11, and this is my segue, I had the talk with my dad. Mm-hmm. And the talk was, how do you deal if the cops pull you over? Well, how are you going to deal with it if you're confronted with the police? How do you treat that? And Tyler, you had a talk with Messiah, your six-year-old. Yes. He's asking questions that most six-year-olds don't ask. And how did you handle that?
Yeah, so it was in the wake, in the midst of everything that was taking place not long after George's death, you know. It was a Sunday. And our church, Greater Mount Zion Church, that was obviously a focal point, what was taking place. Mike Ramos was a focal point of everything that day. And my son, our family were watching church, as we always do on Sunday. And because of what he sees and because of what he hears, he asks the questions. And he asks, you know, why don't police, you know, why don't they like black people? Or why wouldn't they just get off of him? Or do my friend's family, do they feel like that against me? Do they not like me because of the color of my skin? I had that conversation with my father when I was 12. Okay, I was in middle school. I was in the sixth grade. This is a six-year-old asking me these questions. And my father framed that conversation with me growing up on the west side of Austin. And he said, Tyler, you know, these are the do's and the don'ts with police officers if you're ever put in that situation. But me and your mother, we have to be honest with you. Just because you do these things and what I tell you, based off of what I've seen growing up, based off of what I've heard and the things that I've experienced in life, I can't tell you outright and promise you that that's going to save your life. And what he did say, though, was, Mom, we will be there to fight for you, but you let us do the fighting. Don't take the fight into your own hands. Flash forward. Now I'm having that conversation with a six-year-old. The ironic thing is that it's like 6 years prior. We're cutting the time frame literally in half. So the conversation is sped up. And while me and my wife, we've had that conversation and had that talk before as to how we were going to do it. When it came time on that Sunday, I wasn't ready. It broke my heart to have to explain to him those same things. And I started out saying the same thing that my father said, the do's and the don'ts with police officers. And then when it came time to that part of me saying that I can't promise that that will save your life, that was when my wife literally had to step in. And this is what I want people to get, because I don't want them to get confused by what was said in the article. What my wife was telling my son was literally like, we can't promise you that you are off limits to this happening to you. This can happen to you. But because he's six, you also had to speak a vote of confidence back into him and pick him up and tell him that mommy and daddy will be there. But you are by all means not off limits as a young black male. It can happen to you. But hearing that said and talking that, man, it hurts. You know, it hurts, man. I wanted to shed tears because he's six, he's processing, we're talking about it, and it's like, but then, you know, I know that my dad had that conversation. I'm talking to you. You had that conversation. Everybody in the black community, especially as a black male, you have that conversation.
No, you know? No doubt.
And you have to have it, right, Sid? I mean,
yes, sir.
You have to have it.
Yeah, if you're a good parent, you can't send your kids out there without knowing. Because I grew up I wanted to be a cop, Doug. I wanted to be a cop.
Really?
And when I saw cops growing up, I didn't panic because they were friends of the community. But then I had to talk with my dad at 11, and I go, really? That can happen? And then all of a sudden, he goes, check your history. Yeah. Let's talk about the 60s. Let's talk about the police dogs. Let's talk about the water hoses. So those kind of things kind of opened my eyes at age 11 as I'm entering young adulthood. And, man, it was really eye-opening and sobering for me, Doug.
It just gives me a chill, you know, hearing you guys talk about this because, you know, this, to me anyway, this is primarily a white issue. It's white acceptance. It's essential that whites understand that white people are educated to how blacks have been mistreated and are continually mistreated. And as a white father of three boys, it's incumbent on me to pass that down, that all races are the same. We're treated equally, okay? And everybody deserves a fair and equal shot. And I don't think in enough families that talk that you two have had with your sons, have had with your parents, white people need to have that similar kind of talk. I go for a walk every day. And yesterday I was walking. And we've got it's a melting pot neighborhood. We have blacks, whites, Indians, you know, all kind of races. And a car was pulling up, maybe 100 yards in front of me, and their brake lights came on. And I imagined myself as a black person and trying to empathize and see what goes through a black person's mind when a car stops. You know, you don't know what, if they have a weapon, if they intend to do harm to you.
Three words.
It gives me chills right now and to think what goes through a black person's mind. And it was a white father and a daughter, and he was teaching her how to parallel park.
Oh, wow.
Simple as that. Wow. But it was sobering to me because black people see brake lights on a car and backing up. And just the, I don't know how paralyzing it can be, the fear that goes through, you know, young black people's minds. But to me, it was sobering.
I'll preface it, Doug. I see brake lights. It doesn't alarm me. But if those brake lights are on a police car.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's different. That is different. And this new thing with real. Javier Ambler II. Yeah. Happened last year, and thankfully Tony Plohetsky was a dogged, determined reporter to get that video, to get that story out to the public. Killed in police custody, another George Floyd moment. Tased him four times, and the guy said, "I can't breathe. Save me!" He says, "Save me!"
Yeah.
And they couldn't. And I've been getting emails, guys. I mean, I've been getting. Because I've been writing a lot on this issue and the Drew Brees thing, and mm-hmm. I've been getting a lot of emails saying that it's overblown. It's a Democratic political ploy.
Political.
It's an anti-Trump deal. You know what? I could give a rat's ass about anything Donald Trump or political. This is a human rights issue to me. And if a guy like me or Tyler Campbell can't walk down the street, if I can't have a peaceful heart when I get pulled over, instead of thinking, man, is this guy going to blow me away if I make a sudden movement? And this is supposed to be America? I mean, that just doesn't sit with me. And my BS meter has always been good. I try to answer some of these emails. And, Duck, we've talked about this. And it's like teaching a pig to sing. And I'm like, this guy's like, what about black on black crime in Chicago? I go, I can't even get, how about our president didn't even reach out to the Floyd family? He's tweeting about a conspiracy theory about the 75-year-old man that got pushed over, but that maybe it was a setup.
Yeah.
Come on. Our president has to be better. I'm not a political guy, but president's supposed to unify, not divide. And this country, with all the love we're seeing in the streets right now with the peaceful protesters, those rioters and looters, they should go to jail. I'm sorry. Go to jail.
Yes.
Take them to jail. But the people that are out there for the right reasons, that gives me hope that the kids get it and people our age are starting to come around. But our country is harshly divided, and it's for the wrong reasons. It's political and racial. That's a bad mix. That's a bad
mix. Let me say this too. I think so. And you guys grew up in times of the 60s. And so you guys have seen different forms of leadership. Okay. And so, and right now, that's why I'm so excited about the new names of people that we don't know, but will know. And I feel like it falls more on everybody within your community. Why?
That's because where it starts.
The leadership at the top on TV, you're not get what you're needing right now. So therefore it falls everybody. You literally have a job to do right here and right now in your own community. And if you have been sitting on the couch just watching, that's not helping. You have to make presence felt in the community, because everybody is searching for that leadership in the highest of place. And right now it's not there. So it falls on what we, the people, and we talk about humanity. I am my brother's keeper. Okay. So let's get to the humanity. But again, said you have to have an ear to listen and a heart to serve. Something is wrong with getting tased 4 times and saying, I can't breathe, please help me. Something is wrong when you have like Mike Ramos situation or Floyd situation. That's wrong. Humanity. So we got something to do.
Somewhere along the line, though, the value of a human life.
Somewhere.
I mean, when did that fall behind political boundaries and agendas? That should be the number one thing. And yeah, I don't wish bad on anyone. And there's some people in America that are doing some very bad things right now. Swastikas and guns and
of course.
And the next time you hear someone say all lives matter, when I hear that, my response to that is maybe to you, but not to everybody. Not to everybody. You're missing the point, Doug.
Yep, that's because of white privilege. And too many white people are offended. Too many white people are overly sensitive. Like, well, what do you mean white privilege? You know, I have black friends, or I grew up in a mixed community and that sort of thing. But we don't have the same fears and the same lack of opportunities that blacks do. And white people need to quit being so sensitive. And we do have white privilege. And yes, don't be offended by Black Lives Matter. What that means is Black Lives Matter also, you know, and it's been interesting. Maybe they should have put T-O-O or also at the end of that. Now, I don't know if they changed any minds or not, but white people need to get over their sensitivity and realize that hate is taught in the homes. Racism is taught in the homes, and that's where it needs to start. You need to change people's minds, starting with, you know, young children in this country. Parents need to have that obligation to teach their kids.
You know, Duck, and I've said it many times, racism is the worst family heirloom. It is the worst family heirloom. It started out many, many generations ago. It is passed down from generation to generation. It's nurtured. It's protected in families.
Gotta stop.
Somewhere there has to be someone to stop the cycle. A young person in 2020 that might be in the seventh or eighth grade needs to say, white person needs to say, I don't want to talk about black people like grandma and grandpa do. Or like great-grandma and great-grandpa do. I don't want to be that person. I love my black friends. I love my Hispanic friends. I love my Asian friends. I love my Middle Eastern friends. And I'm going to hang out with them. And the one thing that I've noticed, Duck, and I know you're in your early 30s, Tyler, and we talk about it, Kirk, because we're in the office. It's a pretty diverse newsroom. And those kids in our office love each other. Oh, my God. From the 21 to 40-year-olds in our newsroom, which is basically more than half now. It's a very young newsroom, Tyler. They hang out. They love each other. They go out for drinks and they party together. And you can tell you just look around. You learn a lot by observing. And you look around and you see a white girl over at Danny Davis's desk, or Yeah, and they're laughing and they're joking. And it occurred to me, they're not talking about race. Like, I mean, Kirk and I went through some things. They're not talking about race. And they kind of get it. And they're the people that we were laughing at, you know, with their head in their cell phone, Instagramming and doing all that.
Yeah.
It turns out they were listening. And thank God that they were listening, because they're the ones that are going to be running this country in 10 or 15 years. And I think with their votes, and, you know, everybody, I encourage you, whatever side of the fence you're on, please vote. Let your voice be heard. But those kids that are in their early 20s and 30s, they're going to be the older guys, along with you, Tyler. They're going to be the ones that are going to determine what our country is in coming generations. Duck and I are going to get up out of here, and you guys are going to still be here. And it's going to have to – it's going to be up to y'all to make sure that something like this can never, ever happen again.
That's it. That's it. I feel like there's a certain level of pride. You know, there's a certain level of, like, we got something to do. If you never thought you had something to do, brother, you got all the motivation in the world to go get up and do it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. And it's like I used to tell our young people, it's like, man, you can never wake up any day and say, oh, I don't have anything to do, bro. You have plenty to do. So you already had a lot to do. Now you have even more to do. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I get my motivation from looking at my two babies every day that I wake up, and I say, what are we going to pass down to them? It's right. That simple, sir. It is that right. Simple.
And that's one of the positive consequences of this whole pandemic is the fact that we're all stuck in our homes and we're glued to the tubes. So you can't miss these videos. And just like we're talking about Mr. Ambler, who's dead, because he wouldn't dim his lights. You know, that's absurd to even think about.
But you think about it, Devin. Why did he not stop? He's afraid of the cops.
He's afraid. Yeah. He's terrified, man.
Exactly.
Because I mean, I don't condone that. I would have stopped. I would have stopped, and I would have prayed to God Almighty. I'd have called Bev on the speakerphone and and say, I need you to record this. I need you to record this encounter. But I don't condone running from the cops. He should have stopped, but maybe he knew something that we didn't. I hate that he's no longer with us.
And said, can we say this? And Kirk, this is good. Listen, I haven't committed a crime. I haven't done something maliciously to harm somebody. Got a good record. I don't think I got no outstanding parking tickets. but here's the deal. Whenever I have gotten pulled over from early on to later and said, back me up, brother. And even though you know that you don't have anything, you know that you don't have anything outstanding, you know you are a good upstanding citizen, said, when them lights flash, it's a lot that goes through my mind as a black male. It is a lot, said. Gosh,
I don't want to die today. That's the first thing I think. Mm-hmm. God, don't let me die today. Don't let me die today.
It's got a powerless, selfless feeling, doesn't it?
It is, Doug.
And it's not a sugar coat. It's not like Stead's not saying this to hold woe is me or to throw grease on whatever you want to call it, a fire or whatever. He is literally just trying to open up and let people know through conversation that this is how you feel, even when you know you ain't done nothing wrong. Right. Said, I'm so bad with it, Duck. I'm so bad with it. I take the keys. I drop my keys on the ground outside the window.
Wow.
Pulled over.
Wow.
Okay. So they know. And I can be honest with you, bro. The last time I got pulled over was going by the Capitol building right there on, what's that, 11th Street?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And here's the deal. So because of me and what I just shared with you, I took the keys, had my both hands out the window, threw the keys out the window, and the police officer came to me and he said, and this is no lie, he said, "You're terrified." I said, "Yes, I am."
Oh my God!
And I knew, but he wasn't saying that to be angry.
No,
he was
just
more in shock that this is a feeling. And I want to say this is a couple years back, not recent, but I could also see that he felt my fear was apathetic towards that. You know what I'm saying? Like he saw that.
I saw
he probably hadn't pulled over. Maybe somebody who white, black, Hispanic, whatever, would throw, you know, their keys out the window. He said, I'll throw them. Boom.
Really?
And both hands are out the window.
Did your daddy teach you that?
No, it was just, you know what was interesting? I actually learned that from one of my friends growing up in Westlake High School. So I learned it from a white person.
Right.
And he told me that it's what he does. And I said, man, I guess they know the car's not going anywhere.
Right.
They can see my hands. So I guess that can't be too bad of a start. You know, if you have your license in your hand already. And so
a lot of sense.
But this is I'm in my 30s now when this incident happened, and I could tell that the police officer was literally was surprised. And I think he could feel my fear or whatever anxiety I might have as a person who got pulled over. He was surprised.
It was probably eye opening for that police officer. And those are teaching moments, and mm-hmm. that's what we're looking for, these teaching moments and being educated. And, you know, mm-hmm. we were talking before we started about Dabo Swinney at Clemson, you know,
right.
at the top of the ladder as far as coaches now. And he's gotten involved in a situation where one of his assistants used the N-word. He repeated the N-word when one of the Clemson players first used it. And so that player now has said, well, he used the N-word and he shouldn't. You know, there's a lot of conversation about the N-word, and I wish both of you would kind of share, you know, your thoughts on when blacks use the N-word, and is that acceptable to y'all?
Tell me what. Let me go first. Can I go first?
Go ahead.
Let me go first. So, and say you can chime in. For me, I never liked it. Okay. And I want to be honest with you. Okay, when I was in the fourth grade at Cedar Creek Elementary in Eanes ISD, I was called the N word for the very first time by another white student at the school, you know, whatever. And right. so what it did for me, said I used to open up the dictionary. I'd go to the library, I'd open up the dictionary every day, and I look up the N word in the dictionary and read the meaning of it. And it it tore my heart apart. It tore my heart apart. And so when I felt that feeling, I never was wanting to be one who used it, because mm-hmm. I felt early what it was like for it to be used on me. And so when you hear my conversations, when you hear me talk still to this day, I don't use it. I just don't use it. And I always remember what it was like to have the word used on me at, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and I didn't like that.
Right.
And so I try my best not to use it, and encourage others, man, please, you know, to please don't use it. But but at the end of the day, though, Kurt, it's used amongst us. You listen, when you teaching your children and they hear a curse word from you, you don't tell your kids go ahead and use that curse word. You tell them, okay, I know mommy and daddy said that, but that I wasn't supposed to say that. That's wrong of me. So
right.
You're not supposed to use that word. Say it. Yeah, chime in.
I grew up
you
in
can't
the,
use it.
I grew up
you
in
can't
the
use it.
I grew up in the '70s, listening to Richard Pryor tapes. And
And so
that generation, we used it, and Richard was using it, and it was funny, and it was in our community. But he was probably the first that made it in vogue for black people to say it to each other. And it kind of was a cultural thing. And then Eddie Murphy comes along mm-hmm. and he does it, Chris Rock. So those generations of black comedians that have come along have kept it going. Then gangsta rap shows up in the late 80s, early 90s, and boom, it just blows up. And every song has it in it. So I think around 2004 or 5, I decided that I was going to try to eliminate that word from my vocabulary. And because it gave white people power, some perceived power.
Mm-hmm.
And The one thing that black people hated, and I know Stephen A. has said this on ESPN, white people, you don't tell us what we can and cannot say. I mean, you slurred the slaves with that word, and if we want to call each other that, that's our right, you know. Now, me personally, I've replaced it with another word.
Speak on it. You told me about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I use the word ninja, you know, instead of the N-word. And ninja is you look up ninja in the Urban Dictionary, it's probably what black people that don't want to give power to the N-word are calling each other now. So, and so I think that it's evolved. It's still widely used. A lot of my family members still say it. I don't say it. I tell you what, that's a word I probably used to use many, many, many times in my conversation with my relatives. But now,
Do you cringe when you hear black people use the word because it perpetuates the word?
Not at all.
You don't cringe?
That's part of our lexicon, man.
You don't do it. You chose not to use part of your chose.
It's a personal choice, and I'm not. Now, I have told my sister, you need to quit saying, say ninja. But you can't tell another person what to say and what not to say, given the history of the word in our community among ourselves. Now, you know, if me and Tyler are talking and we throw a couple of N-bombs around and you walk up and you drop an N-bomb, you might be on the ground.
Don't do that.
Not your party. Not to get too far off subject, but when you hear Fat Joe say it, I kind of cringe because Fat Joe, you're Puerto Rican. You're not black. So I don't think Fat Joe needs to be saying it. That's just my personal opinion. I like Lean Back, but I don't like Fat Joe saying the N-word in Lean Back. So, and Fat Joe's a rapper, Duck. I know you don't know him.
Duck, Coach him up. Duck, you were with it. You knew who Fat Joe was, didn't you, Duck?
No, I know the name, but I don't listen to rap.
He just knows Fat Sid. He doesn't know Fat Joe. What do you think about Drew Brees? You went to Westlake, Tyler. Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Drew Brees created a firestorm when he just said, I would never disrespect a flag like that. He didn't bring up the struggle. And I think at the time he forgot that he works in a mostly black locker room. That's how he makes his living. And he forgot that he lives in a city of New Orleans that's 60% black.
60%
black. So you're a Westlake alum. Yeah. What was your reaction to Drew Brees and then the subsequent backpedal and the myriad apologies that he's released?
Yeah, it was, man, for me, I thought it was an opportunity also to be the voice for that 60%, to be that voice for those other guys in the locker room and use that interview to bring that light, you know, like, I thought, that whole togetherness, I thought it was a great opportunity. And you know, I read Pete Carroll's comments one day said, I think before that, and he said, you know, we all owe Colin Kaepernick apology. Wow. And I think, you know, and it was like, it wasn't ever about the flag. You know what I'm saying? My grandpa coming from East Texas and Tyler was present on D-Day. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Was there, he was present. It was documented. PBS found the records. BC Campbell was present on D-Day fighting, you know, the right for this country. But it was never about the flag. And I heard, because I know he's a good person, you know, does nothing but listen. My friends from New Orleans, I played ball with, you know, Drew Brees up until that point was the safe. That was everything, you know, bringing a championship after Katrina. But it was, amazing. I just felt like it was missed. And a lot of black people were very hurt by this, man, because you didn't trust a lot of people, but you trusted Drew Brees.
Yeah, he was unassailable,
You know what I'm saying? It's especially for the people down there in New Orleans. But, like, I'm curious, can you win a locker room back? Can you look around the huddle and can you win those guys back, after all of that?
Can you
still win them?
The one thing about football, man, you played it at a high level. A football locker room is probably the closest thing to an army barracks you have in all of sports. There's some tough-minded people from all different walks of life, rich people, poor people, different races, colors, and creeds. Yes. But once you get on, once you get in between those lines, and Drew Brees has met with his teammates and he's apologized vociferously, and they know that they're a team that people are watching that could be a Super Bowl contender. Once you get in between those lines and you get together and you win ball games, those kind of things can work themselves out in the process. And I think that the Saints are going to be fine. I hope so. Those linemen don't pull the longest yard thing and have to block for them on the first third and 12. They just let everybody come through like they did Burt Reynolds. But yeah. I think it's going to work out, Duck. I'd be interested to hear from you. You've been around Drew more than me. I've only interviewed him a couple of times. You're a Westlake guy, and you've been around him. How do you think this is going to play out? And what do you think about the constant apologies from him? Because I know him to be a decent dude. I was surprised by his comments. What do you think, Doug?
You know, I wasn't that surprised because I think he's a good dude too. And I thought it was highly unfortunate, the comments he made. But I think he represented so much of white America for sure.
That's a good point, Doug.
It's just like we're saying it. It was never about the flag. It was never about his patriotism or lack of patriotism. It's all about police brutality and racial injustice. That's what it was about. And don't get sidetracked by the flag. Don't get sidetracked by his police pig cops or comments on Castro. And I would blame him for that. But don't get sidetracked. The message was police brutality in this country. And to me, like we've talked about, Tyler, today, it's teaching moment. And I'm thinking, here's a guy who was out front in post-Katrina, restoring New Orleans. Here's a guy who he and his wife donated $5 million to the state of Louisiana to battle corona victims and help victims. We are judged by our lives in totality. I hope not by one stupid comment that he regrets. And he's had the backbone to apologize repeatedly, as you said, Cedric, and also to take on Trump. Because it's easy to say, oh, kind of back off. I do a lukewarm apology and I'll be fine. I think he meant it. I think he's a good person. And I think he'll do everything he can to restore the peace in the locker room and regain the respect of those black players that doubted where his heart was. And it's just so important. It's just like these Confederate statues that are being torn down, and white people, some of them go, well, it's just part of our history. We're just celebrating history. He said, but white people don't understand the connotation, the image, the feelings that are conveyed by a statue celebrating somebody who fought for slavery. So again, I think Drew will be fine because I think he is a good person, has a good heart. But again, I think it's a great teaching moment in the history of our country.
I'm glad it happened.
I think it was.
It needed to happen. It needed to wake people up. And yeah. If Drew Brees, who's as decent a dude as there is in that league. Yeah. I mean, I don't know him that well, Doug, but I don't see Drew Brees as a racist. I just do not.
I don't think anybody ever has. I mean,
Tyler
grew up with him. He knows him. Tyler knows him.
Yeah, because Christian played with Reed, and I know Reed better because Reed and Christian intersected when they were on varsity together. Christian was a little younger, right. And from what I saw from Reed, like it was never. Yeah. Anything like, you know, but I just know, fellas, everybody came for me because it's like, see, you went to Westlake. See, I always knew
deep down. Like, right?
Oh, man. But it
opens. I get it, too. I get it. I get that. I went to a mostly white high school and I got friends going, man. And I got, there's some people in my hometown that just are. I don't know, hometown, and in Austin, that just you can't. you can't push your beliefs on other people. Either they want to hear it or they don't. And people they believe what they want to believe. And mm-hmm. you know,
I like his apologies. I like he didn't bow up. You know, I think a lot of people in that instance might have said, after everything I've done for this city and this community, and I've helped blacks and whites, and the heck with all of y'all. He didn't bow up like that. He humbled
himself.
He did. He did humble. He came back at it with humility and love and understanding. And that's why I think he's, you know, I think it was just such a great teaching moment.
I love it. That's, well, Tyler,
that's good.
Yeah, I know we're going to wrap this up here in a couple minutes. I just want to know, how has this changed you as a person? Has this changed your perceptions of anything in America? And what do you think about this country moving forward?
For me, I'll start with me, Sid. And I had me and Trentus Jones, we talked a lot. Trentus is like another big brother to me.
Good people.
And he said, it comes from Shakespeare, you know, heavy is the head of the man who wears the crown. And so what I'm finding out personally about me, this is me, this is just Tyler Campbell talking, that I recognize that I have a platform and I'm just now being okay, like with my platform, like knowing that not everybody is going to be happy and okay with what I say. I think you guys as journalists, I admire both of you because you guys have squashed that long ago because that comes with your territory and in your profession. I've always been that person where I want you to love me. I want you to enjoy me. I want you to appreciate everything about me. And when somebody objects to me, it kind of hurts. And this is a situation where speaking out more about what you're experiencing on, you know, on your race and on your behalf, there are people who object to what you have to say. And for me, it's a new level of growth because I'm not normal. I'm always being, you know, in the middle. And now I'm just getting to the point because I think about my son in that conversation where it's like, right is right and be on the right side of right, Tyler, so you never go wrong. People are going to have a problem with what you say regardless, but if you say what's right and what's in your heart, you have to be true to that. And so my growth as a man, as a father, as a husband has been like, I need to speak on what I know is right. And if there are some people who are going to be upset about that, by all means, I have to answer to the Lord up above. And so heavy is the man, heavy is the head of the man who wears the crown. And I get it because I want to wear that crown, said, and I want to be that person who speaks out about what is right and who empowers our young people, who brings and sheds light to the business world of these types of barriers. And with that comes a heavy head. And for the first time, I think, said, for the first time, not for the first time, but I think for me, I understand Earl Campbell more and more.
Wow.
Because there are people who were upset with Earl Campbell because he went to Texas. There are people who were upset with Earl Campbell. He had a good relationship with Bone Phillips. There are people who were upset with my father because of, you know, he loved country music or he needed to pick more of a side or we didn't hear enough about him. And, or, you know, with the articles that he's done and when he has spoken out about things that, you know, there's people who've been upset and it's like, yo, I admire you, Pop, even more. Yo, because you were strong and firm in who you were. Mm-hmm. And as a man, you didn't detour your belief or your mindset because of what the whole world had to say about you. And so for me at 33, man, I love my pa even more because of what he stood for, what he did for his people, what he did for the university, what he did for the team, what he did for relationships with people, how he gave Bum Phillips a chance. You know what I'm saying? How he gave Darryl Royal a chance, Ken Dabbs a chance. You know, it's just reminded and reflected for me personally. I'm growing more and I'm in love and I have more admiration for my father more than ever. Wow. And if those things are being shed in my life, I can only imagine what is going through the minds of other people in and within this country. And that's what makes me. That's what makes me happy and excited to get out of bed to do what I do with my voice. But I admire both of you because y'all are seasoned in what you do and have always wrote what you felt was right or what you felt was on your heart and could give a hoot about what anybody else says. A new article is coming your way tomorrow.
Yes,
you know
sir.
What I'm saying? So
yes, sir.
I think that's And that's important for our youth, right? Because a lot of times people are getting caught up in trying to do the right thing to please other people. Mm-hmm. No. And or you're going to have some sandpaper to smooth some things out. You're going to have to get cut a couple times to get to where you want to be. And that is okay. Like, that is a good thing. It's a good thing for people to not agree with what you say. It's a good thing, but you have to stand firm in that. And that's where I am. That's where I am.
Can I hug you right now?
No.
I
mean, hey, man.
No, you can't.
We can't hug anymore. I'm anxious to see how society's going to be moving forward, because I don't know what we're supposed to do. I don't know what we're supposed to do, fellas.
Elbow bump.
It's a brave new world, and I hope it's going to be so much better for Messiah than maybe it will be right at this instant. It will be. And for people like you that are growing and taking risks and not playing it safe and saying mm-hmm. things that need to be said. Change is hard. Change is slow, too slow. Progress is too slow. And it's going to offend a lot of people. But
yeah, it is.
It's such a good cause, and you just articulated it so well and said, "I love you for it."
Hey, I love you guys, man.
Well, we appreciate you. We'll catch up again sometime in the next few months just to see how things are going. But always a pleasure, Tyler, man. Give our best to the family, man. We appreciate you.
Hey, love you guys. Love what you do. And Duck, tell them my favorite food is chicken fried steak.
There you go. I love it.
Tell them, okay?
We will. We'll spread the word. Stay strong, my friend.
As always, love you Take guys. Care. Keep it up.
Love you, man. All right.
Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Well, that will do it for episode 183 of On Second Thought. Great conversation with Austin Zahn, Tyler Campbell. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.